How do you say it? Do you say Camby or Camby?
Camby.
Camby. It's Camby.
Camby.
Camby? Is it... Well, like, the guy has a name, right? It's a name.
It's Camby.
Camby. And we're back with the Camby Report. I'm Ian Bushfield.
I'm Matthew Naylor.
And I'm Patrick Meehan.
It is 207 days until the October 20th, 2018 municipal elections in Vancouver and the environs. We have a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Vancouver mayoral election, the Metro Vancouver pension vote, including some discussion of what on earth Metro Vancouver is. Then we're going to review the departing mayors, because a lot of them are sailing off into the political sunset this year. And then we are going to be talking to some of our dear listeners. And we have to say thank you so much. I know I wasn't on the last episode, but there was a ton of responses. So good job, boys.
Really big response. Bigger than I've ever gotten for Politico's.
It was really fascinating. It was really neat to see.
So keep those responses coming, and we will keep talking back at you. First up, the Vancouver mayoral race. A couple of things happening with the three biggest political parties. First off, Vision.
Yeah, so Vision has been in this quagmire missing area. No one's really heard from them since the by-election. And there's this question of, oh, are they going to team up with Cope and One City and maybe the Greens? And then all the far leftists are like, fuck Vision, they don't deserve to be part of our party. And the Vancouver District Labor Council, the big union organization, is like, no, Vision should be there. We need all the progressives together. But now Vision looks like they're going to run their own mayoral nomination race.
Well, I mean, there's nothing to be said that this isn't still posturing. We're still so early days that it's entirely possible this is, you know, posturing around to try to get to a position where they can come into an agreement with the other parties for some form of independent candidate or a Vision candidate or something that everyone can agree on. At this point, sort of trying to read into it is a bit like reading into the tea leaves, because we don't really know who's going to run for that nomination, what their timeline is going to be, or even sort of how many conversations are still going on with the District Labor Council and the lefty parties.
And they haven't announced, like, when their
timeline
to nomination races are going to be. Have they? No.
And in fact, if I recall correctly, and I'm trying to vaguely remember, is when Gregor ran for the nomination, I believe that was still farther into the year than it was at this time of year in 2008.
I think the thing that's made this year so unique, and we'll get to this when we get into the NPA, is how they've kicked off so early with all the excitement, because they think this is theirs in the bag. And we can come back to that.
They're not necessarily wrong.
Okay, never count chickens. But anyway,
I think, like you're saying, Vision is trying to...
I think that was the NPA's problem, was they spent too long counting chickens.
Oh, for the love of God.
Just in backyards. So Vision is trying to position themselves. They have said, I think their president even said to the Vancouver Sun something like, you know, we just want to see if someone comes forward. We may not even run someone. It's sort of like when the Green AGM, which was just before our first episode, they voted 100% for Adrian Carr to be their mayoral nomination. And she was like, maybe. Depends if the polls work well for me.
It's a really interesting thing, because this is very much within Vision's MO. They like throwing their weight around. They will partner with other parties when they feel like they need to. And they will completely shut them out of power if they feel that they can command their own majority, like they have in recent elections. But, you know, in 2008, there was a deal between Vision and Cope and the Greens and, the general left-wing
party,
the non-nonpartisan association associations, the Association of Non-Nonpartisan Associations, to basically take out the NPA for, you know, whatever reasons that each of those parties had for allying. Mm-hmm. Vision is you know, being coy about it right now, and it's kind of unsure. I don't know how wise a decision that is. I think that Vision, if they are going to have a legitimate shot at taking this mayoral contest, probably needs to start getting out and campaigning and matching the excitement that the NPA has right now.
I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think that voters aren't really paying attention yet. And voters will pay attention in the last couple of days of an election and then decide when they're in the polling or in the voting booth. I mean, the way you're describing it reminds me a lot about the 2013 provincial election, where, you know, the NDP ran up a 20-point lead in the polls, and by the time all was said and done, they were, you know, 6 or 7 points back.
Once people really started to think about the issues and look at the candidates. And Adrian Dix, went back on his word, three times.
Well, and it was very clear that the Liberals ran a very effective campaign. They were completely in disarray 6 months before the election, but they pulled together.
And the NDP came out against the economy.
For the 2 months that mattered, right? And, that's something that could easily happen here as well, is that the NPA could easily shoot themselves in the foot in their nomination race. You are correct. You are correct that they are doing well right now, but, you know, doing well in March is not doing well on October 20th.
Well, and I think one thing Vision's probably hoping comes out of this, and this is just an announcement right now, but if they get someone big and exciting come forward and say, I might actually take a stab at that, it can erase the past.
Yeah.
Just in the same way, like you're saying, Christy Clark erased the Gordon Campbell. Two-thirds of this podcast is listening to or is reading A Matter of Confidence right now, which apparently is what everyone in BC should be reading.
Literally everyone.
But that points out how Gordon Campbell's fall precipitated Christy Clark's return to politics, and she pretty much erased his legacy in one campaign.
I mean, it's an interesting thing to look at, because I would say that provincial politics is different from municipal politics, majorly because of turnout. Turnout is very low in municipal campaigns, and so those people who are engaged right now, and a lot of people are, more engaged. I've noticed.
We have the analytics to show they're engaged because they're listening to us.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Basically, this podcast is proof of this podcast's point.
But even your average voter is not paying attention in March to an election in October. I really don't believe that running up a raft of wins now lays the groundwork for a win in October. I think it's good. I think you definitely want it, just like you want to go on a 10-game winning streak in the first month of the hockey season. But that doesn't mean you're winning the Stanley Cup.
Sure. And so what other candidates might be coming forward for Vision? Because you said some big names have been dropping out, like Libby Davies, for example, and Andrea Reimer has said that she isn't running. Who might?
Right now, the only name floating around that hasn't said no is Shauna Sylvester, who's with Van City right now.
She's formerly Van City. She's currently running the Urban Affairs Department at SFU.
So she hasn't said she wants it, but she hasn't said she doesn't want it, which is apparently the best the non-NPA parties can get for a candidate for mayor at this point.
Well, we can move on to talk about the Greens, where something similar has happened. So Adrian Carr currently is the only sitting Vancouver Green councillor.
She's very wildly popular. She topped the polls in the last election by a pretty significant margin as well.
Well, and we just have to look at the by-election for how the Greens did on school board, where they topped all three by a wide margin, that the Greens have political capital in this city to spend.
Although I would argue that, Adrian Carr topped the polls because of, one, the political polarization of Vancouver politics, and the fact that the Greens have been able to somehow appear nonpartisan between the NPA and Vision, and so the Visionistas will put Adrian Carr and Pete Fry as their last two council candidates, and so will the NPA, and then that leads them to top the polls.
I don't disagree with that.
But that still means they're popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that if you're the Green, one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to overreach by running for mayor, but you also don't want to underreach. We saw in the last school board election, it was very clear if the Greens had run several more school board candidates, they would have gotten several more school board trustees.
My biggest advice to the Greens is stop being so regressive and awful.
Individual policies aside, and yeah, I have my issues with the Greens, from their strategic perspective, it is a very tough decision whether to pull Adrian Carr out of the council race, where she'll undoubtedly win re-election, and put her into the mayoral nom, where there'll be a higher exposure to sort of Vision and the NPA's way of attacking, and both of them have their own ways of attacking a candidate and tearing them down, and sort of putting a spotlight on some of her more problematic positions.
But then again, if you don't go for broke,
what happens if they could have had it?
I think the best thing the Greens have going for them right now is people are upset. People are feel like this housing crisis is out of control. Yep. No one has a good answer for it. And the Greens don't have a legacy.
Yep.
They have no baggage.
The NBA has so much baggage, and Vision has so much baggage. You're absolutely right.
So the Greens can walk forward and say, we have solutions. They're not tested. Or maybe they've been tested elsewhere, but no one ever in politics looks at what other jurisdictions do.
And the Green breakthrough on the island, I think, really helps them because it makes the Greens feel like a viable party. You know, this has been a party that has elected one person to legislatures over and over and over again. Elizabeth May is the party of one federally. Andrew Weaver was the party of one. Adrian Carr is the party of one. And now you've got, you know, a host of Green Party MLAs in Victoria and, you know, a host of Green Party school trustees.
And those MLAs are widely respected.
Yeah.
Not universally. Yeah, no one's universally respected.
So it'll be really interesting to see what the internal polling says for Adrian Carr and whether or not Adrian Carr wants to sort of give up the power she has as a counselor to make the gamble of running for mayor.
Mm-hmm. And does that mean that there are other people who might be stepping forward to run for green seats on city council?
Oh,
that
several.
Yes, for example.
Oh, Pete Fry, obviously, who we've already talked about at length in the last podcast, is definitely running for city council.
He was the person who... was in the last by-election, got a you know, fairly substantial chunk of votes.
Third or fourth place in the end?
I think he was fourth in the end.
But it was a real logjam of candidates, yeah.
But the winner of that particular campaign was Hector Bremner of the MPA, who is now running for the MPA mayoral nomination. He's not the only one, however. Parks Board Commissioner John Cooper has stated that he will seek the MPA nomination for mayor.
So he did his announcement in this past week, and his announcement was really well covered. He had a ton of press. He did his announcement right in front of the Bladel Conservatory, and he spent all of his time then, and I think since, talking about how he personally saved the Bladel by, like, fundraising from every single person.
He actually can, like, he has legitimate claim to this.
Okay.
He legitimately did fight for Bladel and was one of the leading voices on it.
And I'm not totally trying to mock him. I'm just saying, like...
And I really respected him for it.
Does that translate to mayor?
The Vision Party did also support it in the end, but it was looking like it was dicey for a while. And I'm a big fan of the Bladel Conservatory. I think it's really neat.
All right, well, go check out the Bladel Conservatory. It is endorsed as really neat by the Cambie Report.
But over and above that, Cooper, I think, represents the sort of the old guard of the NPA coming forward. I've talked in the past, in the last episode of this podcast, about the sort of civil war within the NPA or this battle that's been going on within the NPA. And this is the old guard putting forth their candidate to fight off the Hector Bremner, young, urban supply side economist type people when it comes to housing. And there's also a third candidate for the NPA.
Well, maybe. First, Cooper.
Oh, yes.
He represents that establishment not just because we say he does, but because he has already the backing of George Affleck, an outgoing NPA city councillor. I think a few other commissioners and random NPA people.
This wouldn't surprise me because, like, the biggest place where the NPA civil war has been playing out has been on the Parks Board, where... Parks Board Commissioner Aaron Shum resigned from the NPA because of the bullying and because of I think, fairly legitimate disagreements in policy and practice with the rest of the commissioners, and the NPA does have a substantial amount of people on Parks Board at the moment. There are, you know, other candidates who might be coming forward, but as it stands, the most credible candidates for the NPA nomination are John Cooper and Hector Bremner. There is, of course, Glenn Chernin, who has an awful website.
Well, we covered him last podcast as well with the Cedar Party when he ran for them. He really does represent sort of a bit of a knee-jerk reaction element within the NPA, I think. But it is, I find it really fascinating to look at the way the three, like, different factions of a party come forward for the mayoral nomination. It really will determine so much of the direction of that party going forward based on sort of this, like, horse race between three candidates who all represent different wings of the party.
And as far as we know, and we know people will correct us if we're wrong because that happened last time, multiple times from every different angle.
Wait for the mailbag.
The NPA race is just a first past the post win for mayor.
So I reached out to the NPA to ask them on their info email address what the nomination system was for both mayor and council. We have yet to hear back from them, which I find really disappointing. I think, I mean, we're not, a media outlet. We're not global news. But I think if you're running a municipal party, you, I think, have a real obligation to respond to your email address that you have when anybody comes knocking, even if it's Joe Citizen. I used our Canby Report email address. I outlined who we were. I outlined our download metrics, which were fairly good for the last episode, and have had no response back despite it being, I think, a week ago that I emailed.
So Matthew's getting distracted by all the fun that is the Turnin
fighting
website.
For locals.
It's Glenn Turnin's website is particularly terrible.
My favorite part of it is where he talks about how he will keep the viaducts in the city forever because we can't lose those.
Mm-hmm.
Falling apart.
They will stand eternally like the Acropolis of Athens,
but that
monument to Vancouver's brief flirtation with the Mosician highways.
But that does really show that schism. Is George Affleck, as a city councilor, has spoken against removing the viaducts before as well, and that's sort of been the vision, the NPA line for a while. And you had Adrian Crook today, who's running for nomination for the NPA, come out and say he doesn't want to revisit it. He says that the viaducts should never have been built, and he wants to see them torn out.
And he tweeted something about, like, car bros being...
Yeah, he said, come at me, car bros. If there was any party that that was representing the car bros, I'm doing the air quotes, element of politics in Vancouver, it's been the NPA for 10 years. And so this is a new wing of the party that's emerged that didn't exist 3-4 years ago.
And so if you do have this first-past-the-post system, which I'm just assuming is what they have based on a couple rumors I've heard.
First 6-past-the-post, like... Wait.
Well, for council. So yeah. Mayor
but
would
they
just
also
be...
have to decide how many council candidates they're going to carry.
Yes.
Which I'm curious how that mechanism works. I assume that's the
I think the
I would imagine it's the board.
Yeah, I imagine the board would determine that.
Again,
although
listeners will correct us.
If you are involved in the NPA, please do get in touch. We would be fascinated to know.
And in fact, I would love to have somebody on the show to explain the system and explain how it would go.
Well, that is basically what we're looking at for the Vancouver municipal races right now. Why don't we move one level up? No, not the province, the region. Metro Vancouver's board has announced that they are going to be voting themselves a retroactive pension increase. Pat, do you have any information on this?
So what they've done is they've decided to create a pension for those that sit on Metro Vancouver's board. The pension is retroactive to those that have sat on the board since 2007. And the pension itself is, I believe, $1,100 per year you've served. If you serve 10 years on the Metro Vancouver board, you get $11,000 a year. Does that make sense?
It's not a super hefty chunk of change, but, you know, it's...
Well, and that's only if you serve 10 years on that board. You're unlikely to serve. And that would be pensionable after you're 65, which is something that people often miss in this situation.
You know, what's interesting is that if I had been elected to the Metro Vancouver board, because I ran for the Metro Vancouver board in 2008, I would, in fact, this year, if I had been reelected, hit that 10-year pension thing, which I could look forward to in another 35 years.
So they've estimated that this will cost about $490,000 to set up and another $62,000 per year, which is not actually a huge chunk of change.
And politicians should get paid and remunerated for their service. Oftentimes they forego pensions in other fields because they have to take time off their work. In most municipalities in Lower Mainland, being a city councilor is effectively a full-time job, and you are remunerated somewhat for it. But it means that you are foregoing a pension, and I think that's a really key point. I never really bought into the taxpayer rebellion crowd that really fights against any kind of a pay raise for councilors. I think, you know, with politicians, you pay for quality and you maybe hopefully get quality.
Governance is a service and, you know, we should remunerate people for that.
But this is like the story that will inevitably have the Canadian Taxpayers Federation quoted, which is the 5 people who sit on a board who call themselves the Taxpayers Federation. But it feels like there should be outrage on this just because people get upset when they hear people vote themselves a pay raise because when I go to work, I can't vote myself a pay raise.
Which is such simplistic arguments.
But I think there is some justifiable anger here just in that it seems to have come very quickly and very silently in the night. At least that's how Global spun it.
Well, that's,
but maybe that's a...
Well, and it's retroactive.
I mean, I understand that. Like, I understand all of those issues. But I also, I mean, and I don't want to speak about this particular one necessarily on my philosophy, but my philosophy is that you should be well remunerated to serve your province or your city or what have you not. Especially because you do get really, like, it is not a nice job. You get yelled at all the time.
And it's a way to encourage people who aren't just the 1%, like lawyers and doctors and business execs, to be in government.
The independently wealthy.
We shouldn't want to see the diversity of the people.
However, I do think that there is like one thing that I take issue with, and that is, I don't think that people will feel anger. People will mostly feel, you know, when they read this story, confusion. They'll ask, sorry, who voted themselves a pay raise?
What is the Metro Vancouver board? What, you might ask.
Does what this is go the Metro to every Vancouver? Councillor?
So
to
here's,
every mayor?
Here's my question. Do you guys know how you get onto the Metro Vancouver board?
Well, I think you know. No, I don't, because I lost that campaign.
Well, so that was, but that was the one thing you ran for, what a position that would have directly sat on the Metro Vancouver board.
In fact, the only
the
directed,
only direct position, which is the University Endowment Lands, it's, UEL, which is Electoral Area A.
Yes, which we're going to get wrong again.
Yes.
It's Electoral Area A, which is the University Endowment Lands, Barnston Island, Passage Island, Boyer Island, and this giant chunk of uninhabited land to the north of the North Fens.
Yes. And so there's that. But everybody else, it's decided municipality by municipality. Now, I don't know how all the municipalities handle it, but in Vancouver, the mayor selects who sits on it, which I think is actually a fairly anti-democratic system. There has been a big push over the last couple of decades to have it directly elected to the Metro Vancouver Board, because the Metro Vancouver Board does have some taxation authority and things like that. I don't generally agree with that. I think that it's perfectly fine to have a body like that. But I do think that maybe there should be a vote of council of who sits on the board or some such. And so in Vancouver, the board is six vision councillors sit on the Metro Vancouver board.
Yeah, I think this is one of those few times that sortition might actually be a good system, where they just put all the
council... I have no idea what word you just said.
Sortition, where it's where they just put everyone's name on a ping pong ball in a hat and then draw them out, and those are
by
the
lot.
Yes, by lot, drawing lots, drawing lots.
Okay, I mean, like, I'm not necessarily disagreeing, but I do think that there's better ways to do it. I don't necessarily, and so, but so, what does the Metro Vancouver board do?
So the Metro Vancouver Board controls a number of civic services that are better administered, or in the province, in its wisdom, has determined that they are better administered for the region rather than by the, what are, 23 billion, like, 1,050 municipalities that make up the Greater Vancouver Regional District, which is branded as Metro Vancouver. That regional district, and Metro Vancouver isn't the only one. There is the Capital Regional District.
I think there's a Nanaimo Regional District.
Yeah, and I think there's also a Okanagan one as well. I could be wrong there.
Well, no, there's a bunch of regional districts. Every municipality in BC is in a regional district. There's the Fraser Valley Regional District, which includes Abbotsford, Chilliwack, and like two other places, including Agassiz. All of BC is effectively, as far as I can recall, part of regional districts.
Anyway, those regional districts, at least in Metro Vancouver's case, because each one will be governed by their own act or some similar type of regional district legislation. Metro Vancouver, because it's the biggest city, is or biggest metropolitan area, is special and usually gets its own thing. Governs, in particular, water and transit to a greater or lesser extent through the various governance structures.
Oh, and if I could do a really quick clarification, I did look it up. I was basing my understanding of who sits on the Metro Vancouver board off of George Affleck's tweet earlier that said that it was all vision people. I believe he also said Andrew Rimer also sits on it. The primary members of the Metro Vancouver board from Vancouver are Heather Deal, Carrie Jang, Raymond Louis, Andrew Rimer, Gregor Robertson, Tim Stevenson, all from Vision Vancouver. But each of them has an alternate delegate, which includes Melissa Geneva, Elizabeth Ball, George Affleck, Elizabeth Ball, George Affleck. And so they've done everything in their power to ensure that the NPA doesn't have a seat, which, again, I don't actually think is good. I think that, you know, we should, like, the NPA have four seats on council. They should have one of those, you know, six spots at Metro Vancouver, or seven spots on Metro Vancouver.
You know, and it's difficult to institutionalize that partisanship. Like, you can't say each party must get a proportionate allocation of seats without, like, writing some very specific legislation that recognizes the role of political parties in BC. But,
sure.
I don't know. It felt unfair to me when Mayor Robertson did it, and I think his worship was incorrect to do so. But perhaps a new mayor will see things differently in the future.
I sincerely doubt that, given the polarization of Vancouver politics. I would much rather have a structural shift.
Hint.
But part of this, I sense, is just Vancouver is a way to avoid amalgamation. Because the thing that happened in Ontario is they put all of the suburbs of Toronto into Toronto, and now it's just one city, and that's how you end up with Rob Ford as mayor, people like to say.
Well, and so, and Metro Vancouver doesn't do politically charged things generally. Metro Vancouver handles a lot of, you know, waste treatment and mm-hmm. things like that. Some like air quality regulations, some non-enforceable urban planning rules for the various member municipalities that places like Delta have flagrantly violated.
I'd say they're more like guidelines.
Guidelines, yeah. Urban growth plans and things like that.
Regional parks.
Yeah, and regional parks as well.
Both liquid and solid waste.
Yeah, and so the government, it's, and that's again where I would push back against the argument of like direct elections or so on and so forth. We're overly politicizing the board because I don't think it has a politicized role. I think it's a group of councillors that get together to manage the bureaucracy of the region.
But are you just arguing for a technocracy now?
I mean, I'm not horribly opposed to it, but I do like democracy.
It is, I think one of the biggest and most important things that Metro Vancouver highlights is the bizarre democratic gap that is electoral area A, but we could do a whole thing on that, and I won't dredge up my bugbears from a decade ago.
You know that we'll get a lot wrong on it because it's so complicated it would require us to spend significant amounts of time refreshing ourselves on the issue.
Basically, the university has a private...
We went through this.
Private fiefdom.
We went through this.
Oh, fine. I do listen to the podcast. I did listen to the podcast. I promise. I have thoughts. Anyway, that is what Metro Vancouver is. One of the things that is one of the Metro Vancouver similar boards is the Council of Mayors, which is established by the South Coast Regional Transportation Authority Act. And that is a beloved organization, which we all know as TransLink. And so the TransLink board, it's governed by the Council of Mayors. All of these things could be better explained, but it's a 45-minute podcast, so...
Okay.
All right, so, Council of Mayors, that TransLink organization, is going to be seeing some significant turnover as another mayor bites the dust. This is our next segment, Another Mayor Bites the Dust, because still more mayors have been announcing that they will not be seeking re-election this fall as we move to the other municipalities. The most recent mayor to announce that they will not be seeking re-election is Richard Walton of the District of North Vancouver, not to be confused with the City of North Vancouver's mayor, Daryl Musato, who likewise is not seeking re-election. They were, respectively, Walton was chair of the Water Board and Musato chair of the Transit Board for quite a while. Is there anything that you have to say about the North fans?
Yeah, so just to give a sense of it, is that the City of North Vancouver is obviously the Lower Lonsdale area and a little bit above that. District of North Vancouver sort of wraps around that like a horseshoe. Weirdly enough, City Hall for the District of North Vancouver is a couple blocks away from the City of North Vancouver. At sort of the end of that horseshoe. But Richard Walton has been involved municipally for a very long time. He has been on, as you said, the Mayor's Council. He is currently the vice chair of the Mayor's Council as well, with Derek Corrigan as the chair. And he has been a longtime advocate of TransLink. He was instrumental in fighting in putting together the 10-year plan and has been a big friend of transit expansion in the region for many years. And I, for one, am sort of sad to see him go. I thought he was an excellent voice and a good moderator in the region.
Walton had been around since, I think it said, 2005. And that's...
2005 as mayor. I think he was on school board or the school board of North Vancouver and as a city council or district councillor for... Sometime, I think we'll probably have to do a correction segment next time as well.
Wait a while.
he's also been around for long enough that he is 90 years old this year. And he doesn't look it at all, but I can definitely understand why he's tired of this, especially now that Phase 2 has been funded, which was something that he had fought long and hard for against the Christie Clark government.
And I think he cited in his reasons for leaving that one specific development plan for District of
Maplewood, North Van, which is just east of the Second Narrows Bridge, and is going to be quite a large population base. I believe they're looking at like 10,000 people living in there. It'll be one more town center. It's currently not old growth forest. It's currently new growth forest, and it's actually undeveloped land, undeveloped former brownfield. It's a really interesting development, and it's going to really shift the district a little bit over.
So the district, because it doesn't have a natural center, their center would be what is the city of North Vancouver, has been pushing this plan where a number of town centers or kind of get...
Yeah, Burnaby and Surrey both pursued the same
agglomerated
strategies.
To, you know, the edges of the city, basically. Mm-hmm.
Burnaby and Surrey pursued the same strategies throughout the 90s and early 2000s to varying degrees of success in varying places. Both of them managed to successfully do it in one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thing you see outside of the big cities like Vancouver and Surrey is mayors have these much longer tenures, especially in small towns. It just kind of becomes... that guy's job. Well, it's usually a guy. But
just look at Derek Corgan. He's been mayor since I was in elementary school, I think.
And Burnaby's not even that small of a town.
And I'm not even that young of a person, although I like to think I am.
and like, you can see this, how one person can have a substantial impact on the shaping of a city. Mayor Musato in North Vancouver, the city of North Vancouver, has been pushing a very strong new urbanist agenda in that area, and in particular has been fighting over an area of redevelopment called Moodyville, which involves... a huge amount of densification, the expansion of the Lonsdale Energy Corporation, and a number of very positive things that still wear down political capital. He has been mayor for, I think, 11, 12 years, and was on city council for another dozen years before that. And, you know, eventually you just sort of reach a point where it's time for a change for yourself and for some succession to happen in that city.
It should also be noted that Mayor Walton was one of several mayors that actually significantly distanced himself from the BC Liberal Party in following the transit referendum. The failed transit referendum, I think, really damaged a lot of relationships between what was a region of right-of-center BC Liberal rough-affiliated mayors and the province. And Mayor Walton is one who has not talked about his political affiliation since then, along with I think the mayor of at least one other city that is no longer running for re-election.
Speaking of cities that are no longer running for re-election, Greg Moore of Port Coquitlam.
And he would be the one.
Yes.
He actually asked them to take his name off their mailing list after the referendum.
Oh, no.
He said he wanted his membership canceled, and he asked to be taken off their mailing list.
So also City of Langley, not to be confused with the Township of Langley.
We need to name things better in this province.
Yeah.
Can we get into that at some point? Because I have fascinating thoughts on why, or fascinating anecdotes on why there are different, why towns split apart.
We'll shelve that for a future pod.
So, there are three Langleys, right? City, township, and Fort Langley?
Well, Fort has no municipal governance.
Oh, okay.
Fort is part of the township.
Okay.
I believe it's township. It might be part of the city.
Maple Ridge, White Rock, and Delta. Delta is interesting because Mayor Lois Jackson... is from the Swanson Ladner side of the corporation. Is it a corporation still?
It is still a corporation, but I believe they are looking to transition.
Oh, good.
But it is fascinating that Lois Jackson is not running again, and I'm sure the Premier's office breathed a pretty big sigh of relief. Lois Jackson has been was poised to be the opposition mayor to the NDP. Everything over the next couple of years. Her not running again is good news for them. Also good news for those that want a regional growth strategy and want to move towards a less auto-dependent future. It's going to be very interesting to see where that goes in Delta, and I'm really fascinated about the inner politics there.
And we have a couple that are still undecided. West Van and Coquitlam's mayors have not yet announced whether they will be running for re-election.
But if the West Vancouver mayor doesn't run for re-election, who will run for the position? He has run unopposed in each of the last three elections.
Wait, didn't Pamela Goldsmith-Jones was the mayor of West Vancouver for a while.
Oh, sorry. The mayor of West Vancouver has run unopposed for the last three elections, if I recall correctly. It might have been different people, but there
so
has
someone
not been...
Will, someone will step forward.
There has been an unopposed election.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners in West Vancouver, you might have a job opening.
It's an easy one. Nobody else seems to run for it.
Well,
it's an easy one to get.
What is not easy is to get everything right, which is why we have a number of things coming into our mailbag. Some positive stuff, and we really do appreciate that feedback, especially those 5-star reviews that you leave us on iTunes.
Not that one 4-star review. Fuck that person.
Whoa. People don't know that a 4-star review really hurts, okay? And it doesn't hurt our feelings, it hurts our metrics.
Hurt my feelings. Because what's even the point? To leave a review for a podcast on iTunes, you have to download the damn app, you have to find it, and you have to press the button. And so just go out there and leave 5-star reviews for the podcast you like, and don't hurt anyone else's feelings. Don't be that person.
Fine.
Smile reacts only, please. All right. So, first off, and most appreciated, I think, Lefty Boys got some facts wrong in the most recent thing.
I do want to get into this a little bit. Most of these are my mistakes, and so I'm going to own them. But I think we do definitely have a podcast. It's a live recording. We do research in advance, and occasionally we're going to get things wrong, and that's sort of the nature of a podcast. And we're going to try our best to keep it down to a minimum, but it does come out from time to time. I will say that I have never been corrected by so many smarter people than I am. We had multiple university professors come out to tell me where I was wrong. We had a former mayor come out to tell me where I was wrong.
And it's only me that's telling you how you were wrong.
I know, it's very weird. And so we had a whole host of really wonderful people come out to tell me I was wrong. And, honestly, I really appreciated it, including people running for council, people that have been on council. It's really fascinating.
So let's start with former mayor Sam Sullivan, who sent us a long email. Not a super long email, but a detailed email, as he would.
And Sam Sullivan is, I think, one of the sort of historians of Vancouver in terms of his interests. He really does have a fascination with it, and I really enjoy his YouTube videos, and so I do generally hew to him being correct in these.
Well, and one thing I appreciated about all the corrections is everyone who corrected us also said a thank you, or there was a lot of appreciation. So Sam said thanks for the podcast. He called it a great service, which is just an honor to have. But he pointed out that he wanted to correct some history. So he said the left and the right agreed in the 30s that we should get rid of the ward system. And I think we'd sort of discussed it as a way to keep the CCF out.
Yeah, I'd always understood it as a gaming the system. That's how it had always been sort of passed on to me. But I freely admit to it being wrong because it went to a referendum and it succeeded at referendum.
Well, and he also points out the Vancouver Labour Council endorsed getting rid of wards at the same time.
Although I think that's probably a game theory issue where everyone is doing the thing that they think is going to give them the greatest chance of winning.
The one thing we did really miss, and I think at least three people pointed this out, including Sam Sullivan, Mike Klassen, a prominent journalist.
Mike Klassen was, I believe, chief of staff to Sam Sullivan. I'd have to look it up. But he was a senior staffer for Sam Sullivan in the mayor's office and has been active in Vancouver politics for I think, decades. He's a fascinating Twitter follow as well.
And UBC economist and past Politico's guest, Kevin Milligan, all pointed out that we missed that there has been a South Asian elected to city council in Vancouver, and that was Seti Pendekur. He was elected in 72, I believe, and went on to become a professor at UBC and is really well-respected.
Really interesting life story. Yeah. I hadn't known about him. And I don't think it takes away from the message that it's unfairly and in a racist way difficult for a South Asian candidate to get elected. I think it's important to highlight the one that did, and I definitely was incorrect when I said that none had ever been elected, although one in 100 and some odd years is a pretty sad record. I was also incorrect, and I think Kevin Milligan also pointed out, but it might have been Brendan Dawes, when I said that you also didn't see this same issue apply to Filipino community. Filipino community also seems to have a difficulty getting councillors elected. They've never had one
at the municipal level.
At the municipal level, again, that I think comes out of a difficult thing that we should be addressing as a society in terms of how we vote.
And Sam also pointed out that Jean Swanson wasn't with COPE in 1988, but she was a unity candidate.
However, a friend of mine did send me a picture of a "I'm voting Jean" bumper sticker, Jean Swanson 88, that was surrounded by COPE bumper stickers. And so I will say it seems to me that these kind of things were somewhat as closely affiliated.
On the green stuff, Devin Rowcliffe and I think Pete Fry also sort of liked this or added to this conversation, but Andrea Reimer was elected to school board, not park board.
She was the first school board representative.
But she wasn't probably the first Green elected in Vancouver.
No, that was Parks Board. They'd had a few Parks Board representatives before that when I went back and looked.
Well, and like I said at the time, it makes sense to vote Green for Park Board, at least intuitively, yeah. If not...
Absolutely.
Technically. But otherwise, still lots of good feedback. I highlighted a few of my favorites. So many tweets. That was awesome. But Mary Leung called us an enjoyable and informative jaunt through Vancouver municipal politics.
In full disclosure, Mary is my roommate.
I was wondering if you're going to jump on that one.
Yes, we do try and fully disclose everything, which is why I have not, unfortunately, been able to report to you any of the evil conspiracies, because I haven't gotten any of the funding that I have been so deeply expecting. So, yes, forces of evil, developers, etc., please do get in touch.
George Soros, pay eagerly for those acoustic panels.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I eagerly await your call.
And I think Pete Fry had a good point, is that our first podcast was a real whirlwind tour through the history of Vancouver politics. We didn't get a chance to go through historic Green Party policy in detail, yeah. And I think we're definitely going to try to do that, as well as probably hope to have Pete Fry and along with as many other council candidates as we can on the show over the course of the year. And we're definitely excited to have him listening to our pod and commenting on it.
Well, I think that Ken Orn said it best on the Price Tags blog. This has been rambling, fun, and informative. So, after this rambling, fun, and informative time, we want to bid you adieu until next week. If you have any information about Vancouver municipal politics or the broader region, please do get in touch. We are always interested in hearing from you. Please like and subscribe to us on Facebook and on Twitter.
We're on Apple Podcasts. We're not on Google Play Podcasts yet, so we'll fix that soon. Mm-hmm. We'll be on all the things. Leave us a review. 5 stars, as we pointed out.
And when you leave a review, please let us know of a deep dive or an issue you want to know more about, and we'll try to cover it in the next couple of months.
And, of course, check out our sister podcasts, Politicoast and Pod Keep Our Land, which will be releasing episodes eventually.
We were supposed to record Pod Keep Our Land tonight, but unfortunately our pod partner, Aaron Rennie, is down sick, and so we won't be able to bring you an episode this week.
Politicoast releases weekly religiously. Mm-hmm. Not to rub it in.
We have lives, okay?
It's funny that the humanist is releasing something religiously, but anyway. On that note, I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
And I'm Patrick Meehan.
Thank you very much, and good night from the Camby Report. Laying down the law heed.
Ugh, did you say that?